Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. What great music, and written by, performed by a great friend of ours at WGN and so many places. You may know him as one of the Blues Brothers, but he is the great performing artist Kevin Pollak, who belongs to Chicagoland and now is out with a new hit called Man About Town. So I wanted to talk to him about it. Kevin, welcome back to the podcast. Good to talk to you.
You as well, Paul. Thanks for having me.
So people do kind of identify you with the Blues Brothers, spelled a little bit differently, right? And but appearing all over, it's B-L-O-O-Z-E, so people know. Appearing all over, but really performing, and you've been in 9 to 5, doing all sorts of shows, Black Ensemble Theater, everywhere. Mm-hmm. But this writing your own music thing is really something that moves you. Talk to me about that passion.
Well, you know, I've been a songwriter since I was a teenager, and I've been doing this for about 15, 20 years and shelving songs and trying new ideas. And I wanted to, run with that dream. And the acting world is great. But my real passion is music, and getting to create my own sound is what I've always wanted to do. And now I'm just going for it and releasing it and seeing how people like it. And so far, people are loving it.
And the last time you were with me, you had a song called Something Good Is Coming Down, right? That was available about a year ago, I think. And that also went well for you. I love that song, actually. That one hung in my head for a long time.
That's great. Yeah, that was my song, my first single that I released last year that I wrote for my wife for our wedding. And, you know, people said, hey, you got to release that. And so I did. And, you know, this is just the follow-up, Man About Town. And, you know, it's only number two of it's going to be five. I'm going to be releasing an EP in December of five songs with those two on it.
So working there, are they all kind of about your relationship and all in that theme?
No, not all of them. I write about different experiences. I write about, you know, tropical places. I'm kind of trying to create diversity on the EP with the songs. And, I have one song that's called The Newtown Sound, which really showcases what I'm trying to go for in this new genre of Newtown I'm creating.
Fantastic. Talk to me about what when we do, and we just heard that kind of music. I mean, it's a little, what genre do you put it in? Because for me, it's a blending of a few.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I'm trying to create a new genre, which is hard to do, called Newtown, which is new Motown, a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new. I'm influenced by the great artists like the Temptations and the Four Tops, as well as artists like Bruno Mars and Justin Timberlake. But you could also put, pop and soul into that category as well, as that pertains to my music.
So you not only released the song, but you put a video together for this one. I watched the video. It was very fun. It looks like, actually, it involves your wife, so she's you're obviously very important in all of this, but looks like kind of a first date story is the way this music plays out in terms of its story.
Yeah, you know, this is it's directed by Derek Oceanhour, a great friend of mine who I was like, you have to direct my first video. And he came up with this story idea of this first date between my wife and I. And, everybody joins into the sound of our love. And it kind of creates that flash mob and all the dancers in the music video. It's, as you saw, it's one big production number of a date night. Sort of a la 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 Land, you would say. He ran with this idea, and he pulled it together with all of us and with this big cast of almost 40 or 50 people, and really created a spectacle.
You did it real well, and you had a lot of people sort of join in. You had people, you know, throughout it. Did you know everybody, or were some of them folks you just captured?
They were all friends of mine, and there was a dance studio, Dance for Me Performing Arts Center, that reached out to me and said, you know, we would love to be in this video. And I said, you know, it's a bunch of dancers volunteering their time. Absolutely, I would love to have you. So, and they created this cool element to it, as you saw, and I brought in some featured dancer friends. And, yeah, so they're all friends of mine, you know, trying to help me out and get out there.
There's a great, I just love this moment. I'm going to just give this away. I don't care. There's a moment when you're kind of having a drink with her, and the waiter kind of brings by a beer, puts it in front of your girlfriend, your date, and then a mixed drink in front of you. Or maybe, no, I think it's the other way around.
Yeah,
and then
it's
you switch
the
them.
Opposite way
it's
around.
The other way around, and then you switch them. I thought that was a great moment. You sort of take the stereotype and say, no, the heck with that. That's not what this is.
Pretty much. You know, that's one of the hidden elements of it's out of the ordinary. Expect the unexpected.
Yeah, exactly. You also blend in, and obviously there's footage of you performing that number sort of looked like in front of a live studio audience, large. So there was a couple of efforts here. There's all these scenes that you're recording, but at the same time, you also then perform that song with your band in front of a group. So where was that one done?
Yeah, that was at Untitled Supper Club downtown. We just so happened to have a Blues Brothers show there that night for a private event. And I asked the people who were in there, I said, hey, you know, I'd love to feature this place in my music video. It's a beautiful venue, and it works perfectly for how the band is shown in the video, as you could see. But we used the Dance for Me Performing Arts Center. That's the outside. We used Joni's Pizzeria in Long Grove. She was generous to donate, you know, her restaurant for our video on the porch scene in there. So, you know, I've been fortunate. Everybody's been volunteering their venues, and it's been really nice to see.
And I want to talk about some of the places coming up. Actually, I'm going to go to one on the list because WGN viewers will get to hear you perform that song on September 20th on our own Midday News.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that with the full band.
Yeah, oh, that's going to be great. I hope I'm here when you do that. Prior to that, coming up at the end of August and the 31st, again, the Blues Brothers, there are a few performances coming up with them, and you'll be at the Taste of Polonia on the 31st. So the Blues Brothers, for people that haven't seen you, although you spell it a little bit differently, it is the Blues Brothers experience, as people kind of remember it, the whole John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd thing.
Yeah, and we do all the Blues Brothers songs. We do a lot of Motown and Stax. You know, so we kind of diverse it up and throw in a little Bruno Mars. So we kind of make it a big party.
Why not? It's exactly what you ought to do. Yeah. You'll also be performing with the Blues Brothers September 22nd at Huntley Fall Fest. And this one I thought was really cool. You're performing on Nocturnal Journal with Dave Hoekstra. That's a coup on October 19th.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm honored that he asked me to be a part of this. And you know, we're going to get a small band together in the studio and do some of my originals, you know, like Something Good, like you like.
But it all builds to the 24th of October. I mean, one could argue, when you actually play Las Vegas. You're like the Shin Lim
really
of Chicago
a
over
friend
here.
Of mine, Frankie Marino. He's a good friend of mine in Las Vegas. He's, you know, their headliner of the year 4 years in a row. Excellent performer. His music is sort of similar to mine, and that's, you know, he's a big influence to me. So to get asked to perform this song with him and, you know, in front of a full audience in Las Vegas, which is at the South Point Casino, is truly an honor and a privilege. So I'm really excited about that.
So when you think of your career, because, again, I've seen you on stage and a bunch of stuff. Here you are doing the music. You're right. Who is Kevin Pollak? I mean, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, who's Kevin Pollak?
An entertainer, I would say. And, you know, there's a line Billy Joel wrote for I Am the Entertainer. And that's what I would consider myself because I love to entertain people. I love to write music that brings a lot of positivity and into people's lives. I don't swear in my lyrics.
Well, we can always change that, positive. Right? We can always add a few words in there, here and there.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what I consider myself. 5 years from now, I want to be known as an entertainer that is, you know, bringing thrills to people's lives, you know, from here on in.
Is it is Vegas? I mean, I know you're appearing there, but is it sort of the, you're the Vegas showroom guy? You're the around Chicago guy? Are you everywhere? Where in your dreams do we see you?
You know, eventually down the line, I'd love to, you know, play out and tour wherever I can around the country, around the world. with my music and you know, getting the word out and performing it all over the place. And, you know, Vegas is just step one of where, you know, I could go in the future. I don't know. You know, I just keep my eye towards the future and think positive and try to just go after it. I don't like, you know, to hear no, so I keep going until I can't stop.
Well, and you've yet to stop. And I think what's great, listen, yeah. You have, you know, and I follow you and we chat. I mean, you have challenges along the way. Everybody does. Every artist is going to have some snags in the road, but you persevere and you make it through, and then you have these great moments as they build. I guess the main thing, too, for any performer, I think of others who might be listening to us and saying, yeah, you know, I want to be a performer and all that. It's important to get that network around you to support you, right? I mean, if you got married a year or so ago, I imagine if you got married and you had a wife who did not support what you were doing, that'd be a problematic relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And my wife is my biggest supporter, and she always tells me to go after my dreams. And, you know, she's there right by my side. And, excuse me, I feature her, you know, as you could see in you know, the song and both in a lot of my music. And the people around me, the friends that I make, I meet so many people. I love talking to people that, you know, it's nice to see them come back and return a favor or help me out in a way, you know, like you and others. And I'm just honored and privileged to know all these people.
Well, you're a good person. That's what the main thing that it sort of plays out. People who want to download Man About Town or your other songs or whatever, what's the best place for those who say, I like this guy, I want to track this guy? What's the best place to follow you?
Sure. It's on iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Tidal, CD Baby, anywhere you can get, you know, music from on all online platforms.
Perfect. You know, everybody uses Spotify. I'm one of those people who actually like CDs, but I use Spotify now. But I don't know the answer to this question. So how does an artist get paid from Spotify? I mean, do you, or is it just one of those things where Spotify gets access to your music?
Well, you can get paid through Spotify, but it's through a distribution deal. Like, I have a distribution deal through CD Baby. Others use other websites.
Oh, I see.
And all of it just rolls through there.
Gotcha. Well, whoever came up with Spotify was brilliant, huh?
Yeah. Definitely.
Wish I had 10% of that. Well, Kevin Pollak, the song is Man About Town, the second in a quadruply, whatever the number is, pentagonally series of songs that will come out in December. It's when that EP comes out. I want to have you back and chat about all that, do a little sampling if we can.
Absolutely.
I want people to check you out. Kevin Pollak, check him out on all those platforms. And if you don't mind, I'm going to go out playing a little bit more. I love the chorus part of this song. It's what I have trouble getting out of my head. I kind of sing it in the shower. So we're going to go out playing a little bit more. Kevin Pollak and his Man About Town. Well, that is a song from the beautiful play showing over at Pride Films and Plays in Chicago up on North Broadway called All That He Was. Very powerful production to sit through, and we'll explain all of that to you. And I don't know, anytime any show has a song about believing in it, which would include The Wiz and Book of Mormon, whenever time I hear a song about believing, it just grabs me because it really is a look to the future and maybe what the world can be. Joining me to talk about All That He Was, the star of the show, Matt Houston, who plays the man. I don't get to give you a character name except to call you the man, Matt. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
It's always good to talk to you. And playing the mother, although that's a reference a lot of people make in their own world, is Sarah Hayes, such an accomplished career in Chicago theater and so just so well known. And really great to see you in this show. So I saw you in Bonnie and Clyde and Adam's Family, so many other things. Sarah, welcome. I think this is our first time together, so welcome to the podcast.
It is. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And then originally I thought, well, let's have the director, Larry Todd Cousineau, and we are going to have the director, but he's more than the director for this show. He's also the writer of the book. He's the lyricist, which means any question we have, he can answer it. And that's why we got to have him involved. Larry, welcome. And welcome to the cast here and joining all of us.
Thanks for having me. I didn't pull a Streisand and also star in it. So,
Well, or a Jerry Lewis. It could have been Streisand. It could have been Jerry Lewis, right? It goes in either direction. Although you're right, Streisand maybe is a more modern day. Hey, Larry, I'm actually going to start with you because the show All That He Was is, we're seeing it now in 2019, but this has been a vehicle that's actually been around for quite a while. So can you just, for our listeners, kind of tell us a little bit about the development of it?
Sure. In the early 90s, when I was in grad school, I was writing a master's thesis working with one of my good friends, Cindy O'Connor, who did the music for this piece. At the same time I was writing this piece, I was also in the process of losing a lover to AIDS. So I did what writers frequently do. It's called an as-if. I put myself in the shoes of he was gone. And what could I do to try to bring those pieces of his life together that had been so disparate all his life? And I wrote this piece with that in mind, and then in the process of writing it, I lost him. So it was all very surreal, and that the in the show, the man is sort of this out-of-body experience where he's gone, but he's watching everyone and directing them, and it all ended up sort of coming true in a way, which is a little crazy. But that was quite a while ago, and for a while I thought the show was maybe, it was starting to feel like maybe an AIDS show would be dated, or maybe something that happened in the 90s wasn't really all that relevant anymore. And then times have really changed, and we have this sort of polarized society now, and I feel sort of like the show's message of healing through unity seems really current and I suppose timeless in a way.
Well, so you addressed
it. It was time to bring it back.
Yeah, you addressed a question I was going to ask, because sometimes, and again, Angels of America comes back, and you know, some of these classic, or The Normal Heart, some of these classic AIDS plays from decades ago. But I think that's the point. I think what you're saying is that what brings it back is not because it's not the AIDS crisis that's bringing it back, although that's certainly not gone yet. But what does bring this back is the fact that it's the struggles in current society. We're still dealing with related issues and these tensions. Matt, let me come over to you. You're the youngin' in this crowd. And so sorry, with all due respect to the others and myself.
It's true.
Yeah. But so you play a character called the man. And I'm just sort of curious because, you know, you've been in a lot of shows, a lot of plays. It's one thing to sort of say, well, I know I'm Atticus Finch now. I know what I'm doing here. But when your character is the man, what did that mean to you? Because did it's generic, or was it to you?
I think the cool thing about having a generic character is reading the script and going through the songs, he really does have a very distinct voice that comes out throughout the show. So I think the fun thing about having the name be so generic is you get to really figure out some of those aspects and really go to the script, and you don't have any preconceived notions walking in just based off of his name. So that's something that was really fun for me to explore.
Yeah, and of course, all these relationships, when I do get to, and Sarah, let me come to you, you play the mother. And having lived through the 90s and 80s and all that kind of stuff myself, I thought, you know, although that's a generic name, the truth is, for people who went through that period of time, to call somebody the mother, the father, or in this show we can also add on the brother, the sister, actually, for me, and I want to see for you, that representation actually is far more than generic. It really does encapsulate a certain being of that day.
Oh, absolutely. And there is a, you know, sort of a universality.
Get the writer involved here. Wait a minute.
Yay. Universality to it as well. And because too, people refer to mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, not only in their, you know, genetic family, but in their chosen family as well. So it can run across the board, whether you're related to someone or not. People will still call people mother or hey, brother, sister, you know.
I walked out of the show, Sarah, I'll stay with you on this, and again, having lived through that period of time, and saying, today, for a child who comes out, for a child who should contract HIV or something like that, how do you think the mother, the father, I would like to think those characters are not as severe anymore as we see them. Am I just being naive and hopeful?
I would like to think that, too. You know, because I think when this play is set in the early 90s, you know, you think these parents grew up in a time where, you know, a lot of this wasn't talked about. It wasn't as much in the open, and it wasn't necessarily as accepted. And now the parents that we're seeing, hopefully, you know, have a lot of them are probably, you know, went through the 80s and saw all of this. And hopefully that has helped, you know, them be more open-minded and accepting.
Larry, I'm assuming this is a director's call. You can correct me. But, you know, if people are coming to the show, they may or may not know what they're in for. They probably do. But even if they're not, one of the things I didn't expect when I got there for opening night was, first of all, the cast, most of the cast is already on stage. I hope I'm not ruining anything, but the cast is already on stage. And we're actually given, and it's a funeral that we're attending, so that becomes pretty obvious up front. And we're each given a program, not just the program to the play, we're each given the program that everybody on stage has. It's the funeral program. Talk to me about the decision that went into saying, because that's like you want the audience with you from the first moment they enter that theater.
You got that. I want them from the jump. We decided to lean in on the immersive experience and really have the audience feel like they were part of that moment, that slice of life of the man in 1993, 1992. I wanted people to maybe even feel slightly uncomfortable that they're having to go through this experience and live it along with the characters on stage. And so that was a director's choice. It was something new in this new version of the show that it's this immersive. And it's partially because styles of theater have really changed a lot in these many years since the show's been around. And I think audiences expect in these tiny storefront theaters to really have an interactive experience and really feel like they're part of it and maybe even confronted by it. You know, it sort of forces the audience to really engage and whether they like it or not,
yeah.
And really be part of the experience. And part of the reason for doing the show at all, really, is to relive that moment for people who have lived it before or introduce it for people who don't know anything about it. So
I think that
was a way to best do that.
Yeah, that immersive experience almost led me to get up and start singing with Matt, and I was afraid I'd be told to sit down.
You would be.
Saying, dude, you're not in this show, so I'd say, but Larry said it's immersive. He said I can just, so Matt, join me. Hey, Matt.
Just call yourself like the cousin or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Here you go.
Wacky uncle.
I think I'm the strange uncle who shows up everywhere.
Drunk uncle.
Yeah, who is in need of some kind of help. You know, Matt, the other thing, and again, I'm going to say this, I don't think I'm giving anything away. I never mean to, but look, you're gone from the beginning of the show. We know that. That comes out very, very early. So I'm not, you know, it's sort of like seeing a historic play, Hamilton, and you know, and then blowing the fact that he's shot. We kind of know. So I'm sort of curious, as an actor, again, the challenge of you play the scenes that you play, but they're all from the perspective of it's over, it's behind you. What kind of challenge is that for a young actor to, that's got to be different from anything you've done.
It's very challenging, I think, and it is. It's very different from a lot of things that I've done. And one of the interesting things for the flashbacks, I really try to be present in them as if we're reliving them, as if we're seeing them for the first time, to keep it as active and forward as possible. And then any time that we break out of those, the biggest challenge for me is the flip from whatever emotion I'm having in that scene, going back to not being more ethereal, being more present in this world where I knew all this happened. And so that's probably been the biggest challenge overall for this production from that standpoint.
Larry, I'm sure you have a lot of people who tell you they relate to various characters. For me, the sister was one. I had a very close friend in law school who did pass away of AIDS, and during the years he was struggling with it, he had one of those sisters. The Bible thumping, you know, God will save you kind of a thing. I'm not going to judge that for listeners who may very well be that. I'm talking about the show itself. But you actually created, I mean, every one of these characters creates a certain persona. They represent somebody, and you almost get a sense it's not that they're bad people, they're just guided by the belief system they have, whatever that happens to be.
Sure. I think for me, one of my goals for all the characters is that all of them have a quality about them that is likable, that is because I think all people have something good inside them. Maybe that's me being a Pollyanna, but that's something I really believe. And the sister character is truly willing to give her life away for her brother. That's how much she loves him. And so I would hope that people would leave the show not thinking that I'm judging religion. I would hope that people would, you know, would leave the show thinking that I presented a character who really loved her brother deeply and perhaps was not going about showing him that in the right way to really get through to him. But I was trying to treat all the characters with some love.
And Sarah, as the mother, you know, you've got three children that you're kind of portraying. And of course, you have the Matt, as your gay son, who, of course, has passed away. But you've the daughter is yours. So you've got her stuff going on. And you also have the very caring other son, the brother, who does such a great job, Ethan Warren. All of these sons, and yet the father, who your husband in this show, and of course we know that relationship isn't working out real well. I just see you getting your character getting pulled in all sorts of different directions. I'm sort of wondering, does the mother relate best to any of those characters? I don't mean do you have a favorite kid, but or do they all get your heart in their own way?
I think they all get my heart in their own way, because they all have different qualities of myself, of the father. And you know, even though the mother is at the beginning not quite as accepting as one would hope, she still loves all of her children, no question.
And as every mother should, right? Just with all the stresses that go back and forth. Matt, as you also have to interact, we see the lover, Joe Giovannetti, who does a wonderful job. He was great in Chorus Line. Let him know I said hi. And so you two have all these different relationships, but it is fun to, as you watch everything from the side, how are you processing that? How are you processing the different arguments you're seeing, the fights between the various people in your life? Sometimes you're talking to them. You're trying to send them a message. Sometimes they actually speak your words. That's part of the magic of the show. But what is that like to observe that?
It is tough, let me tell you. I think one of the coolest parts of my role is I get to watch all of these fabulous performers live in this scene. And I live in the scenes and live in the moments that they are bringing to the stage. And it can be hard sometimes, because there is this idea of, especially from my perspective, of seeing all of this unfold and having this deep desire of wanting to have some impact on those that you left behind and not feeling like you've had that impact just yet. So if I could just say one or two things and just make one connection, then maybe that'll be enough to have it happen. So it's again, a lot of fun to have those moments of discovery of things that I may not have known while I was still alive. And I'm learning at the funeral. I'm learning at these little scenes that happened after I died. So it's a very fun, and it can be a painful experience sometimes.
And of course, you have a lot of support in your own life, because I know your mom, I ran into her in the lobby. She's there every night. Even when it's sold out, she will make her way into that auditorium one way or another.
Oh, you better believe.
So I found that to be great. But you also and you've also done a lot of posting of the show, Matt, where, you know, you talk about the camaraderie of this ensemble and how important they are. I know you all feel that way, and every cast should feel that way. But as you this play is going to play through September 8th. But as you're going through sort of weekend after weekend, is it tough to make maintain? Do you grow every night? Do you have those same experiences every night? I guess that's what an actor has to do. I guess I'll throw that at Matt and then at Sarah.
Yeah, it's, you know, the strange thing is I've definitely had productions where it feels like work, where it's like you're very actively trying to maintain that idea of presence in the scene because, you know, every single audience is seeing it for the first time. So you have to be seeing it for the first time. But with this one, just the way our ensemble falls, the things I am showing on stage are 100% legitimate. When I am responding and you hear a belly laugh, it is because, you know, Colleen made me laugh or Brittany made me laugh or whatever. Whoever said something is legitimately making me laugh. And that's one thing that I find really special and really exciting about this cast is that I have so much fun watching them.
The reason I asked the question, Sarah, is because when I interviewed the cast of Dear Evan Hansen, the woman who played Mom, you know, sort of talked about there's nights you're crying. There's nights that you react. There's nights that you have to sort of outside your body sort of say, you need to get emotional. You need, you know, so I'm sort of curious as playing a mother who's lost her son and just all the emotion that comes with that. Do you have different elements of that on a nightly basis? Some nights you feel a little different differently than others, as they do in shows like Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I feel like sometimes, some nights, my emotions are so close to the surface that, you know, even just sitting in the background while everything is going on, while, you know, I'm sitting at this funeral, that the tears could just start rolling down my cheeks. And other nights, it's like, all right, well, I don't know how it's going to happen, but somehow it will. And inevitably it does. And a lot of that is due to the connections that we are all having on stage and where the story is going and where the emotion is going, that inevitably by the end, when I am weeping, it's truth. It's honesty. It's where the show has led me to go. And it's just like that's the emotion that has to come out, and I have to let it out.
Larry, you know, I'd love to give you all the credit for this and your other shows like Flies the Musical, you know, and all the stuff that you got, 40s the New 15. But of course, Cindy O'Connor is your partner in crime in doing all of these. So I guess I just want to ask you, how important is it when you select a topic, this one very personal to you, and then you have, you know, Flies and other things very different. Can you and Cindy write about anything, or are there things you have to say, nah, Cindy, this one is me?
I think in order for me to write about anything, it has to be something that's sort of part of my core. You mentioned Flies the Musical. That's the most recent thing that we had last year at Pride. And at its heart, Flies the Musical was about outcasts. And it was about embracing what part of you makes you an outcast and realizing that that's what makes you special. And that's something that obviously, you know, resonates hard for me. And I really don't feel like I could write about something that isn't like really in the middle of my heart. So, yes, I can write a crazy parody about something, but at its heart, it has to be something that I really care about. It has to be a message that I really care about. Even if it's just a silly parody show, I can't write something that doesn't have a message that I care about.
Which is really great to hear. And this one clearly is a very personal story and very powerful. I encourage everybody to see it. It's playing through September 8th. That is the date, right? I want to make sure I've got the date right.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And
that's right.
Tickets are at pridefilmsandplays.com. A great opportunity to see Matt and Sarah and all the wonderful rest of the cast that you have. It's a great, and I'll tell you, the night that I walked out, there were people crying, people, and you guys came out afterwards. I assume you do it every night, but, you know, people wanting to hug you, and you really brought them in with you and created a lot of emotion. And that's what it's all about. And Larry, that has to make you feel good as well with this experience. So let me encourage everybody to catch that, All That He Was. And, makes me think of All That We Can Be. Maybe that's the hope in this show. Matt Houston, Sarah Hayes, Larry Todd Cosino. I'm going to go out playing one more time. This is a note to my producer. I hadn't planned to do this, but let's go out playing a little bit more, one more time of Believe, and let that be the final thought we hear in our heads. Check out All That He Was. Thank you. if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.